Guess who's back? Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Hey everyone. Welcome to the Mass Construction Show with today's guest, Mike Weber, principal at Gaston Electrical. I'm your host, Joe Kelly, and this is the podcast about all things construction in Massachusetts and beyond. Today, Mike and I speak about Gaston Electrical and just Mike's outlook in general, but specifically to his company, about marketing, prefabrication, continuous improvement. You'll hear that quite a bit. And we also talk about supply chain and labor issues as well. And then I cut the episode near the end. So if you wait till the end, I'll explain why I cut it. And I'm going to break it out into a separate podcast that will get released tomorrow, hopefully, if I'm on the ball. So everyone, I'm excited about having Mike back. And I bet you are too. Bill's been here in the interim. Mike has been one of the best of that I shared. And I'm really excited to talk to Mike again. I love this conversation. I love talking to him always. Enjoy the show.
You know the drill. I just say, hey, Mike, welcome to the Mass Construction Show, and then we go.
You got it. All right. I mean, I don't know the drill. It's been a while.
Yeah, you're rusty. But you listen every week, so you know.
I have been listening. You can probably tell who listens, can't you?
No.
You only get numbers?
Yeah, podcast analytics are surprisingly
really
crappy.
I can get, like, who went to my website down to, we could maybe talk about that in tech.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you can find out what page they showed up on and then where they went to from there and kind of follow them through. And
I can tell you how social media has been transformed over the last couple of years. And I'm kind of into that a little bit. Just I wish I had, I don't have the data with me, but I can. I'll get to it.
Yeah,
I have the general data.
Okay, so, were you planning on talking about that down the line?
I just thought about it.
Well, no, it's,
I didn't actually plan very much. So you sent it to me Wednesday night, and I was out almost all day yesterday. So like this morning, I was looking at them again, and like I made a couple quick notes, mm-hmm. and then I was like, screw it, let's just go.
Yeah, that's how we more or less did it last
time.
Anyway,
I was you know what? Hopefully, it's somewhat engaging.
Yeah. So now who does that? Is that Tim?
Yeah. So Tim's our marketing guy. And so we have a Google Analytics page that's, you know, he kind of gives me, you know, we meet one-on-ones every week and kind of at the end of it, he's like, all right, here's where we're at. And we kind of go like numbers wise, like here's how many web page hits we had. Here's how long people stayed on your page. Here's what other pages, like sub pages they went to, like, you know, leadership, job opportunities, projects, all that stuff. There's a top 10 there.
Yeah.
Where they came from. So how many people were in Boston, Cambridge, New York, India, you know?
Yeah. It's amazing how granular it can get.
It's amazing. Yeah. You can probably get it down to a server if you really wanted to.
Yeah. And now we're going now. We're recording now. So it's,
oh, yeah, okay.
We're just going to count this because this is interesting. Okay. So forget welcome to the Mass Construction Show.
Yeah,
you're here, Mike Weber.
I thought we were prepping.
We were, but I'm interested in this and I think other people will be too. So it's funny. So Tim's a marketing guy, but
yep.
He's savvy enough on the data side that...
Yeah, I mean, there's a fair amount of... I think it's called Sprout or something like that, where they kind of, yeah, exactly. It gives you all of your, you know, it merges all of your kind of social media stuff. And then there's a Google Analytics page that I think is fairly intuitive once you actually kind of figure out how to use it. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of just, it's really a snapshot every week that we look at. We look at monthly, we look at yearly, how are we doing, what kind of engagement. And then like we try to think about that stuff, like what does it mean to the company? Okay, so... We're averaging 45 people a day on your website. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, okay, well, what does that mean? Where are they going? Like, are they looking for jobs? Are they looking at your projects? Are they trying, you know, like, who are they? Sometimes, you know, we're not getting it down to the server. Like, we don't know if it's you or a general contractor or an owner, but we could tell they're in Boston, we could say, you know, things like that.
Yeah. But the answer to that question, I have a thought.
Yeah.
What does that mean? How's that for a hard question?
No, it's not a hard question. So, you know, just like any other business, you want to be recognizable, like a brand, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, as we were, you know, I think we detailed last time I was here kind of the growth pattern of the company. And basically, we had a hard time for a long time, people not knowing who we were. Mm-hmm. So we can do that job. Oh, and they didn't know who we were. So it was, you know, we need to let everyone know what we're doing and kind of, you know, that's, even if that's just the goal, if you get to that, we think it's a win, right?
Absolutely.
So that's kind of what we're looking at.
I mean, the ROI on that is tremendous. If it's a...
Well, is it? I don't know how to measure it. I'd love to like see like a real statistic that says this is how you can do that, but right.
Yes. Wait, okay, good point. Like it's not quantitative in that you can see a direct number.
Sure.
But if you know in the past... a 50 million job, you'd want to put a number in on it, and they were like, this is out of your, probably a little out of your league. And now when that question happens, it's, they don't balk anymore, then that's success, right? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, so I would agree. Yes, that is happening. But is that happening because of, I'm just a skeptic sometimes yeah. when it comes to this stuff. Sure. And I do agree that it works. I don't know why, but I do believe in actually doing it still. And I think we have some people who are really good at it. You know, mm-hmm. But generally speaking, like, is that because, you know, word of mouth? Is that because of the social presence and in the online presence? Are there other factors to it? Probably, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know how to, you know, but I do know it works. And you know, it's really cool to look at, you know, your followers per week, you know, on, let's say, you know, Instagram's going like crazy. Like we probably average 25 to 30 new followers a week, very organically. Like you can certainly pay for subscribers yeah. and things like that. So I'm hard no on that stuff.
Yeah.
Like for what? That doesn't mean
vanity anything. Metrics.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Doesn't mean that's, you know, wasted money. So that's surpassed Twitter over the past year, big time. So Twitter was our largest, you know, Facebook is kind of dead, you know, when it comes to, and then LinkedIn's okay. You know, when it comes to, social media presence, I would say people are starting to use it more of a, less of a business tool and more of a personal tool, which is kind of aggravating to me.
I'm biting my tongue. Continue. I'm like, let him speak. Yeah. He's the person on the podcast. I'm about to lose my mind.
Well, I mean, you look at it, you know. Yep. And then, and Twitter had a tough year in 2020, obviously. Mm-hmm. Rightfully so, if you ask me. But that's, honestly, the images that you need for Instagram, people want to look at them. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of really started tailoring our approach to telling the story via photographs and, you know, people, like, you know, we do really cool work. We have really great employees. Like, let's focus on that.
Yeah. I think Instagram has done very well, at least from my perspective on my business, on the allowing more personal connection with people.
Sure.
Right. But I think you hit the nail on the head, like just even from an analytics standpoint, LinkedIn is down considerably.
And, why?
Well, some of it is just as more volume comes on the platform, there's just that much more in the hose. So there's so much. So it gets diluted, right?
Sure.
If 10 of your connections actually did a post 2 years ago, you would see all 10. Now 200 of them posted and you're only going to see 50 posts or whatever. You're only going to see one quarter of those. So
I would agree with that. The dilution's crazy, right?
Yeah. So that's a big part of it. But then I think you're right with the amount of Facebook type posting that's happening there that a lot of people, you know, champion and think is a good thing. I think it's a bad thing. I never like mute an individual, but I will hit the little three buttons on the content. Don't show me this. I'm like, I don't want to see politics. Frankly, unless it's like from a business perspective, like I don't even think like the charity stuff should be there. I know that's probably won't make me any friends, but that's not what it's for. That's a personal thing. Like I don't mind seeing that on a personal platform or on Instagram or something. I wouldn't shun that at all. But that's to me that's a personal thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's gotten out of its intended use when it was started, right? And think about how many contacts you have. How many people follow you, or the vice versa? How many people do you follow on LinkedIn?
Like, yeah, it's probably around
2,000, probably.
It's up to, I think, almost 5,000.
5,000. So think about the dilution you just talked about too.
Yeah.
5,000. No one can read that. And especially if you're even, I'm not on it every day. I'm working hard to put my phone down more, believe it or not. It's one of those things where, you know, if the email comes in that says, hey, people are taking a look at your profile or take a look at this post or someone's moved a job, I'll take a look at it. But otherwise, it's kind of gone down. And that's consistent with our numbers when, you know, as a company, going back to that, right? You know, we're going to have, you know, like I said, we'll probably have 30, I don't know the numbers exactly. We'll have 2,000 followers in Instagram next month, probably, just in,
that's great.
In that surpassed Twitter by 500 followers. And, you know, we... Mm. And that's not, like, whatever. Like, but it is getting the word out. It's like, we are places. We do build cool stuff.
Yeah.
Take a look at, like, these pipe runs. Take a look at the prefab shop. Take a look at our employees.
Yeah. I do think you have to be on multiple platforms, though, because if you just put all your eggs in the Twitter basket and the Twitter basket goes away, you lose all your visibility. So I am constantly thinking about that. But to go back when you were saying about how many people that I am following. Yes, the amount of people I've followed has gone up, but the amount of people that have followed me went up. And at some point, I don't know if it's like a threshold, but when you go to my profile now, it doesn't say connect, it says follow.
Oh, there
so you
go. You're an influencer.
I'll shoot daggers at you now. Yeah, I can't stand that. But yeah, it's... So I've been picking up a lot of followers. So I think I probably have 3,000 connections and I have like 48, 46 or whatever it is.
Sure.
Followers. So that number has gone up considerably, but then you see the views and impressions and engagement go down. Hmm. So that just shows that there's just that you're vying for that much more territory with that many more people. Right. So that becomes a lot more difficult. And then you add on what you're saying, which is like the quality or the intent of the content has gone down.
Yeah.
It's just not
the intended use originally was, you know, strictly a business platform, like make connections within your industry, you know, and it's just not that anymore. So personally, this is a personal, you know, only me. I just don't love it anymore. It's like, okay, great.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, so, I used to be its biggest fan. I used to tell everybody, like, why aren't you on it? Like, the amount of stuff that I would read that I'd be like, oh, that's interesting, and I could do a podcast about it, or I could learn more about it. Like,
right.
I was like, okay, I'm going here. I'm learning stuff about construction. I'm meeting and connecting with other people. In some cases, I'm getting business. That's, like, wouldn't you? I would scream right. from the rooftops. Like, you're stupid if you're not on there. And now I would tell people I wouldn't invest a lot of time in it because I don't think it's... The ROI on that is huge, but I think you have to stay there because I think things change, right?
Sure.
Twitter ebbed and flowed. I'm sure Instagram. Mm-hmm. Instagram already has ebbed and flows, and it will continue to do that.
Right.
So I'm not leaving by any means, but...
I think just having a presence across the platforms just to let people know, you know, your story is important because, I mean, you know, I think it's a recruitment tool. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a retention tool to some extent.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, however big Boston is, it's still kind of a small world, right?
Cool. Yep.
So people start to figure out what your story is and what you're doing. We have a good story to tell. Tell it.
Yep. And now you're looking at those metrics as far as driving traffic to your website at all?
So we can do that. And we do. A certain post may get certain, you know, number of engagements, and then its number of people would actually go to the website from that. Mm. Or, you know, the web traffic will jump, you know, on a day where we had a post about a, you know, service or whatever it may be that we did. So we look at that and say, all right, that works. Maybe we can do some campaigning on this. All right, let's push hospital service work. We own HEPA cards. Let's, you know, I think that's the most recent one. All right. So let's get some posts on that, right? Let's just let the world know, hey, we own these things. They're hard to rent and hard to get right now. So
if you need them,
here we are. You know, we're not going to rent you them, you know, necessarily, but we want to do the work. So
yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
So the original intent of having you on was funny, not to talk to you as an electrical contractor, but to talk to you as a business owner, because just my personal feeling. And now this goes back to you saying, well, what do you know about the ROI? The reason you were on the first time was because I noticed what you were doing on social media. This was 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And I'm like, huh, no other electrical subcontractor, no other subcontractor is putting the effort on social. Like, these guys get it. And then that stemmed to a conversation that led to lean and prefabrication. And I'm like, okay, yep, this is from a business perspective what I think should be shared. And then part of your conversation, one of our original conversations was, you know, you talked about how you and Bill wanted to go into business, but
right.
It wasn't like you wanted to be an electrical contractor. Like, okay, your family owned Gaston Electric.
Right.
Electrical, sorry. And you guys wanted to run a business, and you were actually going a different route at first, and then you tacked back and said, well, let's do it this way. So I wanted to just let people know that was kind of...
Turns out we like it a lot, by the way. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you ended up...
It was the right business for
yes,
us.
Yes, you ended up becoming a licensed electrician. Sure. I think, did Bill become... Was Bill yeah, as
we
well?
Both are master electricians, okay. Like licensed, so sure.
Yeah. Yep. So that was kind of the intent of the conversation originally, and we really dug in a bit on lean construction. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking you in particular, I said, so, okay, so you're going to prefab this. Now, mind you, this is a couple of years ago. This is early 2018. And I was saying to you, all right, so you're going to make up the box. And the model says that the MC cable is 75 feet from the panel to the box. I'm like, you're going to, how long are you really going to cut it? You're going to cut it, you know, 76, so you have a little I remember slack.
The answer was 75 feet.
Yeah, and yeah. You said 75 feet.
Right. So I will, yeah. And it still is 75 feet.
Okay.
Right? But I will tell you that, you know, if you don't trust the system, you're going to make them all 75 feet, but really they should be 68 feet. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's still... a lot of improvement that needs to happen when it comes to a simple thing like cutting that MC whip and prefabbing it. And our people do, we've made a lot of changes since we talked last, primarily in prefab. Mm-hmm. We hired an outside consultant, right in the middle of COVID, Haley and Aldrich. Give him a plug. Nick and Melissa have been great. So they've been working with us, and basically, they are lean experts. And they've kind of transformed how we kind of look at the prefab shop and you know, every process we have. We all, you know, continuous improvement is one of our, you know, core values. But sometimes you just don't have the expertise to do it yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And how do we become a true manufacturer in prefab with lean tenants, right? Well, they're helping us with that. And they would say, all right, that's great. You drew 75 feet for that MC whip, back to that example. But when I go on site, there's a lot of slack in that. Why was it 75? Well, you know, I wasn't sure about the ups and downs. And, you know, why weren't you sure? We could have gone to the site, or the foreman could have come to the shop, and we could have had that discussion. And instead of 10 feet up and down, it should have been 5, and it should have been 70 feet with no slack. And, you know, you do that times 1,000, and 5 feet each is 5,000 extra feet of cable you don't need on the site. You know what I mean? Which is dollars in efficiencies. So we're still working on it, but we've made some, when I say we, I mean, you know, it's not me. It's
everybody.
It's the employees have been huge strides over this, specifically the last year in 6 months.
Yeah. So Bill has been on since you were originally on.
Yep.
Bill, your brother and partner. And we talked heavily about prefab.
Sure.
You know, so we really dove into like what that looks like and what's in the shop. But I think even since then, it's changed more. So I do want an update.
I think this consulting engagement has really opened our eyes to the lean. And we knew, that's why we hired, you know, Nick and Melissa to come in and really transform our processes, you know, with some real, set some KPIs. You know, so some what are the key performance indicators? Yep. You know, here's where we are. Where do we want to be? And just kind of dig in, like prioritize which ones. You know, where they sat down with different groups throughout the organization. Where are your pain points? To help prioritize the KPIs that we, as a leadership team, kind of agreed to. And then it was like, all right, we're all on the same page. We understand what's kind of hurting us right now as far as efficiencies. And so that's kind of what we've done in the past since you probably talked to Bill, I would say.
Yes. And forgive me, I was just throwing on a backup audio recording just in case.
No problem.
So a couple things. Right. So most people are going to know Haley and Aldrich as a soils.
Yep, civil engineer, right?
Yeah, company, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. Doing slurry wall or something like that, they're going to be looking at.
I think it's an alternate practice within the company. I actually haven't even asked. I did ask the question before we hired them, and I just forget the answer. Yeah, they. But you know, they have a couple of lean gurus that eat this stuff alive. That's what they do. They love it, and they're working with companies like us to improve processes with lean and in mind.
Okay. So do they come in and just look at everything? Do you bring them in and do you say, okay, we want to tighten?
Yeah, we started in the prefab shop. Sure. It was, so here's the deal. Ideally it's everything, right? But there's so much that in any organization, we all have pods. We have operations groups and, CAD groups and estimating groups and accounting groups and service and teledata and electrical, even breaking it down further. And then you have prefab and then you have field and you can break those down even further as well. So we started in prefab because that's, as you've talked to Bill in the past and, kind of what our beliefs are we really need to continue to improve that because we feel like that's going to be kind of the future of construction. That's really, we need to be a leader in this field. So we started there. They came into the shop, they reorganized everything in the shop. We've got more people working in there now too. We've changed our tables. We've changed up, how the tables look. We've done, the arrangement of all the tools, like so that cleaning and sorting, those five S's of, that was that was probably a couple of months, right? And we're still not there yet. And then really what we realize, the focus is still there on prefab, but really because prefab talks to, our CAD group so much and our field forces and our operations forces, we need to train everybody else in that. So now we're working with field staffs and we're trying to get them to understand what it means to have, pre-task plans and really have those daily huddles that kind of set the flow of the day, to have a clean, workstation and cart. And it's okay to take 10 minutes to clean it up prior to working because, and making sure all your stock is here and you don't have to go back to the main place you get stock on the job and things like that. Just that planning equates to more efficiency.
I would think as an outsider, getting that dialed in the shop probably is not that difficult. Well, is
it's challenging, but I understand. I know where you're going.
Is easier than trying to get that dialed in the field where you have people on site scattered all over the place, different foremen with maybe different opinions, and just like you don't have that closer to manufacturing setup that you do in the shop.
Right? Yeah, that's an accurate statement. I mean, it's part of the standardization that kind of lean tenets of standardizing everything. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of great, foremen, let's call it, but let's just pick five of them, any five, and they would all order the same exact prefab pipe run a little bit differently, even though it's drawn the same way, or they'll ask for, it's just a little bit different. So we need to standardize that. So, excuse me, you're right. It's more challenging to get that field staff. So that's, we're kind of picking off a job at a time and a general foreman and his foreman at a time to let's get on site and with the consultants, with, our outside superintendents, with our project managers and kind of understand what we're trying to do here, what's the low hanging fruit? Let's do that first, and then let's measure it, and then let's talk about what else we can do on site to you know, help the process and standardize it. Then we'll teach it to the next job. And it's going to be a, you know, it's not going to end.
Yeah.
You know, we'll continue to teach. And it's, but we certainly started the process. I already know it's working. And it's a gut, you know, I'm not measuring it quite mm-hmm. yet. Although there are measurables I can point to.
You have a sense that it's working.
It's working. It will work.
Okay.
It makes total sense. It's a little bit more overhead heavy, you know, mm-hmm. Because, you know, your general foreman is truly planning in which is what they should do anyways. But on a larger job, they're running quarterback in really making sure everyone's doing this, the planning exercises and all these other things that we're asking them to do, the sorting, the cleaning, and all that other stuff. So the overhead, in my opinion, is probably heavier than traditional construction project, but our efficiencies when the actual install comes
way up.
Night and day. Mm. Right.
And do you feel like some of it's, have you run into some cases where it's just, you're not getting the buy-in?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, not outwardly, you know, mm-hmm. our staff's pretty good. Yeah. There's certainly, you know, that some of that old school mentality of like, yeah. just let me do it. You know, just like when prefab started, like yeah. I can do it faster in the field. Yes. And we'll continue to kind of battle that. And it's okay. You mm-hmm. know, that, you know, it's nice to prove people wrong and say, hey, look, wasn't that so easy after, you know, just yeah. try it, you know, yeah. it's.
Cause yes. I could see myself being one of those people where like, okay, that's fine in the shop. And yes, there's some improvements mm-hmm. we can make out here, but like, and mm-hmm. I bet there has to be some frustration that is part of that process, right?
Yeah, there still is. There'll always yeah. be. I mean, just like this frustration with prefab, with let's say, you know, there's an error that comes from our shop. Mm. And, you know, it's, you know, the foreman will get mad and say, hey, you know, WTF, like, this is screwed up. Like, I can't trust the process. I can't, you can't trust the process, right? I said that again. Mm. And it's, well, what, how'd you order it? Well, you know, here's what I gave them. And I'm like, well, what's, you know, they'll say, well, the rod length is messed up, as an example. Okay. You didn't give them a rod length here. Did you guys have a conversation about that? And maybe they just guessed. I don't, you know, like you weren't specific in what you ordered, yet you're blaming somebody else. It's always something like that. And it's not, it's working together and collaborating. So when you say it's easier in the prefab shop as opposed to the field, I agree it is, mm-hmm. but you can't have one without the other. You yeah. know, it's got to be together.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't me pushing back to say like,
oh, no, I appreciate won't work. It. Like I think this all the time. It's you like, know. This is going to be so challenging. Oh my gosh, like daunting, but it will change us as a company. It'll change our field staff to be more efficient. That's the whole goal. Mm. You know, drive more productivity, you know, add more value to the project, get less stress off our general foreman, drive accountability to from our just not our PMs to our GFs to our foremen to our field staffs themselves, so they all know what they're responsible for every single day. It's clean, it's organized, it's standardized. Mm. Like that's utopia, but that's how it should work.
Yeah,
and it's feasible.
Are you having anybody that's like, oh, this is great? Like, why haven't we done this?
Sure.
Always.
Yeah. 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 I mean, our. So we have a couple of general superintendents who run our field staff, and one specifically has been more involved in this process just to not be redundant. We didn't have both of them. And candidly, Bill is kind of more involved in this process with the prefab than I am. Mm-hmm. So Timmy has been involved in, like for instance, he's just like he oozes, you know, the lean like mentality now. Nice. And it's really encouraging. It's fun to watch somebody really grasp it. And then we have some general foremen on sites too, who are just kind of eating it up. They're loving it. They're saying, hey, look at this is great. Like, you know, jobs are finishing without any firefighting at the end. Mm. And it's a work in progress, but yeah, we are getting a lot of that.
Yeah. So it is fair to say that it's a little harder out in the field than sure. in the shop, but
yeah.
it's, you're making it happen.
We will make it happen. It's still going to be, Yeah, it's a challenge like anything else. If it was easy, it would
everybody would do it.
We just do it the old school way and you know, be happy with that. But that's not how my brain works. Or the company as a general. That's not how our culture is.
No, that's why you're here.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you could keep doing it the old way, but then inevitably you're just going to be on a slow decline.
Yeah, for what?
Everybody else will go past you, and then you're trying to play catch up, and it's just that's a bad place to be, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I never want to. Yeah, you don't want to run an organization or be part of an organization. I'm sorry, like that's just to stay the exact same as always, and it works. Yeah. Why change it? And that's because we can get better. Yep. You know, it's like when Tiger Woods won the Masters. I don't know. Was it 2021 or whatever when he won by 14 strokes or whatever, and he hired a new swing coach? Like, what for? What?
Yeah.
You know, well, because I can get better. You know, and I don't know if he did, but you know, it's the mentality of a culture. It's the culture of a company.
Yeah, it's all. It's almost like you don't measure yourself against other people. You measure yourself against yourself yesterday.
Yeah. Right?
Like.
Oh, absolutely.
You know. Oh, hey, I'm the best at this. Well, okay. Well, you should be better than yesterday, right? So back to kind of that original question, because I intentionally made it very broad.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I guess you answered it in a very in-depth and
did I go off on a tangent?
No, the question was, you know, what's your latest thoughts on lean? And I guess I was meaning based on where you were 2018 to where you are now.
So I kind of gave you like where we're at as a company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then my thoughts generally are we're going to see a lot more of this in the construction industry. You know, it already came, you know, but the true manufacturing, lean manufacturing, if you will, is going to continue. And you're going to see, I think more design build jobs. You know, design assists, because think about eliminating waste, right, is a big tenant. So we'll have an owner, will hire an architect and engineer. They'll design a project, hire a general contractor who hires a bunch of subs who will take the drawings that they already, you know, spent months and months putting together, and we'll redo them, like 100%. So we're like,
talk about waste.
What's the value the owner is getting in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the receptacle is in the exact same location on both plans, but, you know, we had to redraw it. And, you know, the design community, we haven't, at least in the East Coast, we haven't gotten to a point where we say, hey, look it, like, we kind of know what this is going to cost anyways. So, I mean, we can add value in not just dollars, but time, right? Because that's sometimes more important than dollars is. And we can do this design build project for you faster, either the same dollars or less, probably less. And, oh, by the way, in lieu of us running, you know, a Unistrut, you know, pipe, you know, using Unistrut to hang our pipe down this hallway, and the ductwork's going to do the same, and the fire protection's going to do the same. We're all just going to be in the same rack, and we're going to build that off site together. And, you know, like all those things, that's where I think kind of lean and, it has to go.
Yeah. So I have a couple comments. One of the problems with design build is the permitting process, because they need a set of MEPs to file for a permit.
But you can get there. Yeah, I mean, in the end, before you build, you know, we do design assist now or design build. Before you actually, you might get some preliminary site work in large packages released, things like with really long lead times. You might get all that done prior to like the final documents being, but you have that final set to build off of, but you're also going to build off them as opposed to redoing it.
Yeah. The thing is, they were the how it would have to be is you need to get in there in early on, because what the owner always wants is that permit as soon as possible, because they don't know how long that's going to take.
Sure.
Right. So it doesn't mean that it can't happen. I just think that that's one of the things that's why, personally, I think that's why we haven't gotten there yet.
You think permitting is, all right.
I think
that's new to me.
I think it's certainly part of it.
I would always thought that ownership groups generally thought that it cost more money to do it. You know, I'm just going to hard bid it. You know, and kind of, you know, the
yes,
you know, that's going to be the lowest cost option. But you know, engineers and architects, they're busy too. So if there's a mistake, or maybe they, you know, lost a conversation that they had 6 months ago regarding a conference room that they didn't put in, like that's a change now as opposed to the design build where, you know, you kind of own it. You've been in those conversations.
Yeah, I think they're just used to building it the other way. Is a big part of it.
We've always done it this way.
Yep, they're used to building it that way, and it will probably get said that we need a permit set of drawings. So you know we haven't.
Yeah, I would challenge you to say that we could do that though, just as fast if we engaged early.
Agreed, but that also means they need to pick the GC mm-hmm. earlier, right? So it really needs to be, and this all becomes that architects really continue to get pushed out more and more. Mm-hmm. But it means that the GC is on a lot earlier, and it almost is negotiated work, right? It's
absolutely. It's like it's open book.
It, I should say it almost has to be open.
It has to be open book. Yeah. No, absolutely. That's how it goes. No, it's open book. Here are our costs. Here's our agreed upon fees. Here's our agreed upon labor rates, overhead, profit, all that stuff is, that's your contract.
Yep.
Not, and then with the main goal of getting to X dollars electrical work at the end. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So then it's our job to be a steward of the budget, right? Yep. In all right, that's great. You want to build this space for $10 million. You know, when the architect or, you know, not to mm-hmm. throw the a lighting designer says, hey, look, we want this, you know, fixture here. And, you know, we price it and it's $30,000. We say, well, that's great. But, you know,
here's the budget.
Here's the budget. That's not in the and budget. I think, you know, we think that we should be spending, you know, $5,000 on this particular fixture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And so you can go to the owner and say, hey, if you want to
get your them money, to up you can the, make that choice. Right. Yep. But I think, you know, going back to like all that wasted time and effort, to do it twice before you build a job, I mean, it's gotta go away.
Yes.
Someone's going to realize it. And we are seeing it a little bit. And I know the West Coast, and other parts of the country do, you know, lots of design build work. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, in our peer group, we have a couple of large contractors out there and 85% of their work is design build, and you know they're a couple $100 million a piece. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So this is what they do with negotiated rates, and that's okay. Like you're not going to hit a home run on a project, but it's much less risk.
Yep.
So that's
good, it's a good way everybody.
To make a living, and then you know you're fair price to the owner. You still made some money.
Yep.
You build a relationship, and you move on.
Like I much prefer to work that way. I mean, I know the people that I write plans for, whether it's a transportation plan or 241 plan or whatever, the ones that call me and say, hey, I need a plan for this project. Can you do it for me? Here they are. Go for it.
Sure.
I don't give them a price. I don't, whatever. When I'm all said and done, I send them an invoice. That price is lower every time for a number of reasons. When I have to put the price in up front, I have to cover the downside risks where, this comes back three times from the fire department, or then something goes wrong and I got some bad information and now I'm redrawing. So like any of those things, like I have to build that in to make sure that that doesn't happen. And in the background, maybe it's subconsciously, I'm saying that this person trusts me enough that I end up probably almost just psychologically, I give them a better price anyway, because that's how I want to operate. I'm like, wow, this person trusts me enough. I'll probably give them a better price on this than I would have for somebody off this, you know, somebody who was like, give me this price. I'm going to get
the relationship business, right?
Yeah.
And you understand the value that you're bringing to somebody. They understand that. That's why they're not asking you to price it. They just want the work done. They're going to pay. Like, they're going to think they know you're going to be fair.
Yeah.
For us, it's hard. There's a lot of GCs and electricals that, you know, probably have that same attitude. I know we do, but you got to earn it, right? What you've already done. So it's a chance to say, hey, look, and we are, you know, we'll do open book. This is the agreed, it's not. And then we'll add value and, you know, watch the budget as we go and prefab things off site with other trades and really get some efficiencies as far as timing and things like that. Like all those things that we can do if signed up early, the market has to go there, especially with the amount of developer work still going on in the city, or in the area, let's put it that way.
No, I couldn't agree more.
It just makes sense. I mean, it's a trust thing, right? That's what you know, you may think it's a permitting thing. I think it's more of a trust, like, hey, I don't know. And
well, I think it's all of it. I think it's, I think by the time the owner is educated enough, now institutional or repeat builders and stuff like that, like they probably should have this figured out by now.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't.
They don't.
So those people can get there, but the even if it's an institution that doesn't build that often, or they do some tenant fit out work here or there, but they never have a decent sized capital project, by the time they realize that design build is the way to go, then it's too late.
Yeah. Well, I would say the institutions we work with, I know for a fact that there's some pretty smart people who run their facilities. So they probably already know that. My guess is that there's some, whether it be still the thought that it's the lowest price is still going to be
the
hard bid work, which is fair. Like we can have that conversation. They're skeptical for some reason. You should probably have one of those people on and, you know, find that out. But
that's a good idea.
They should have it figured out. They really should. And we have some. I would tell you that the large developers in the area, they do have their favorite general contractors. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty smart, and they say, hey, look at, you name the big GC or even smaller one. Hey, we have a relationship. We know you're fair. This is going to be your job. Mm. You know, start lining up. You know, we're going to need a couple of numbers from subs, but so at least that started. And I would tell you that a lot of the customers we work for that, yes, they're still bidding work, but at least there's a fair amount of work that they own straight out of the gate.
Yep.
Which is the smart way to do it. I mean,
absolutely. I mean, I do it on my home.
Yeah.
I have somebody that we've done a dormer, we've done a new kid, we've done a lot over the years since we've moved here. It is the same person every time. And it's not, I don't get three prices. I don't even get two prices. It's
right.
Like, we have a relationship. And like, that is so worth it.
And you know the work you're going to get. And you know what? You can absolutely find someone who's going to do it cheaper.
Yeah.
We don't want to live we want to be fair. We don't want to be low-cost provider.
Yep.
Have you ever heard that? Like, it's the cheapest thing in the world. Like,
yeah.
It's always the worst product.
Yes. Yep.
It's not.
But it is definitely some of that mentality. Like, you look at the car companies that have tried to say, we're just going to put the lowest price, sticker price, like Saturn. There's no negotiating. Here's our price. That's what everyone says they want. Like, oh, well, why won't they just say what the lowest price is and come in? All those companies go out of business because nobody really wants that. Everyone goes in and says, like, all right, well, what's really the best deal you can get? Because they're just trained that's the way you deal with car dealerships. And unfortunately, construction has a little bit of that still left in people where they think, oh, contractors, screw you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
like it's a misconception. I mean, sure, there's jerks out there, right? But
sure,
if you have a relationship with an owner and you developed it and you're on the level of the projects you guys are building and the GCs that I deal with are building, you're not getting the guy with the pickup truck that's going to take your check and take off,
no,
right?
Like, exactly.
I don't know why they can't get out of that,
right?
But,
I agree with you. No, you're right.
They do. Another, kind of alarming thing for the architects is I was having a conversation with a gentleman from Greg McGee from Lendlease. Mm-hmm. And Lendlease has a team of programmers that are, you know, developing software that can build buildings off of, or design buildings off of parameters, mm-hmm. right? And they're spending so much time on it that they've now had to build an entire building because they have so many programmers, they've outgrown the space, so they had to give them a new building. Mm-hmm. And I think they have an Instagram account, it's called Podium. is, okay. And you would think podium construction, but sure. I don't think that's what they're driving at.
Okay.
And he was just saying, you know, you basically would say, okay, I want a building with these dimensions, this high,
yep.
This many floors to do this type of use.
Yep.
Boom, you hit the button and, you know, in a few hours you have 48 different designs of a building.
Every architect listening to this is cringing right now, right? Yeah. And it comes out in like a Revit format or, an auto.
It comes out in a model, yeah. And you're like.
A usable model. I assume.
It has to be.
Yeah, right.
I think their new, I don't know if it's CIO or whatever, the head of technology there is a guy from Oracle that they brought over, and they're just developing that software themselves. And to think about that, like, okay, give me a CLT model, give me a masonry model, give me a glass, give me
right. There's some insane. Really cool technology coming about, right? That makes sense. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. The more I think about that, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
I don't, you know, you can have like a million parameters based on, you know, all right, the stairs, there's two sets of stairwells over, you know, four floors. There's this, there's that. You know, you could start making it, you know, electric room stack and, you know, we need this many elevator banks and it's going to be, why not?
Yeah.
That makes sense. I just, as an owner, that's kind of like you can buy, or if you were going to build a house right now, right? You could do one of two things. You could go to an architect and say, hey, develop me this house and this mm-hmm. property, here it is. Or you could go online and mm-hmm. you could buy plans that,
yeah,
you know, so it's similar to that, but in a commercial world.
Yeah. But where they can do, you know, 58 different iterations of it in a heartbeat. Like I only bring it up because you look at like, okay, if more design build starts happening,
sure,
that's more out of the architects and engineers' hands.
Well, it's only the engineer, right? And architect. Let's you know, a lot of times when you design build, you know, we still need a PE stamp.
Yeah, stamp.
Now, yeah. So, I mean, you still need some oversight. Like they know codes really well. Mm-hmm. They know, you don't want me doing architectural finishes for somebody. You know what I mean?
Yep.
There's a lot of value there that we would still let them handle, but we're really talking, we're talking about the guts of the building.
Yeah.
So when it comes to like a lend lease thing, you know, it's probably the next step for them, right? All right, well, you know,
we're going to just have a stamp in house and
sure.
Yeah.
Do they do that now? Just real quick. Are they doing that, like for their own use, or they want to sell it? Is it going to be a product?
He didn't say on that front, but I know they do like, they build hotels on military bases sure. as well. And they're all like repetitive
cookie cutter. Sort of, this is how it looks
type
like.
Thing. So like that would be perfect for them. Sure. Like they could, and I only bring it up cause I just think it, obviously architects and engineers have a ton of value, but will you need as many of them? Mm. There's going to be the place for them, right? They're not going to go away, but, you know, that's not a fair question for you, but.
Yeah. I mean, the answer is there's probably value, you know, if, let's use the contractors out west that I was talking about earlier. I believe they have PEs on staff as electrical contractors, you know what I mean? Yeah. So they can stamp their own stuff. So, yeah. Maybe that starts to happen.
I could you really know, see that happen.
I would. In the short term, I would partner with local companies who, mm-hmm. you know, who also have relationships with us both and the architects in ownership community. Mm-hmm. But that's probably a feasible next step that, you know, going to where you're talking about.
Yeah. It seems like we're headed.
Yeah.
A mix of design build, technology, and all that changes the way the building gets designed.
Yeah. I mean, that's why.
But speed to market goes way up.
Yeah. We're designing. In-house, we're drawing, you know, in Revit or AutoCAD, whatever you have, you know, a model with the other trades at the same time. And as we're pricing it, and, you know, that process can be shortened and not redone.
Yeah.
And here you go, Mr. Owner, it took us 3 months to do all this and it's going to cost X, you know, for our scope of work. And,
yeah.
Oh, by the way, this is the exact model that we're building. So, you know, if there's changes, just let us know.
Like, yeah. And then you're like, basically have scheduling design and estimate all integrated.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
Because if they're talking to, if the GC is talking to the electrical contractor about pricing, they're like, okay, well, what if we swap and go with this? You know, you could change that in the model and that brings the price down and like...
Totally. Okay. And that's, you know, on a design build, that's a good point. So let's talk about multiple trades. You know, we're all in the same room designing, if you will, and there's a conflict. You know, so we have four-inch conduits hitting a large piece of ductwork. You know, traditionally, the ductwork's been modeled first, and, you know, we're kind of low man on the totem pole. Oh, move your four-inch conduits. Well, great, but that's going to cost me, you know, forget about the time it's going to cost to draw, but it's going to cost me 10 grand to route them the way you want me to. Mm-hmm. What's it going to cost you to move that ductwork? Well, 5,000. Okay, well, for the project, that's a better thing to do. And then the owner's getting value there.
Yeah, that's like the IPD world.
That's exactly right. But right. It's, you know, design build, you can actually do this similar thing. The contract is just structured differently, right?
Yeah, so. Yep. It's probably a good segue. So let's into prefab, right? Because we talked about lean as a principle, and so much of that, it just really ends up overlapping with prefabrication just organically. You guys started off with the back of your office being a prefab shop. Next progression was a new space.
Yep.
Solely dedicated to prefab. How did that, like what has happened? Where are you at?
Sure.
Cause we're
out of space.
Yeah. Cause
we didn't lease enough.
I think January, 2018, when we were talking, you were still in your original.
I think it was 2019, right?
2019. Yeah.
We were still there. We literally moved it. So COVID was last March. So it was the November or December before that. So 4 months or so before March of 20. So, November, December 19 is when we leased some space across. You know, it was kind of short term, 14,000 square feet roughly, warehouse and prefab. We've come to realize that they don't mix well. Not that our people don't get along. It's just, you know, you really need a prefab space and then you need a warehouse space. And when you need the warehouse items for prefab, you ship it or bring it one at a time and then it gets made and assembled and then out the back door, right? We have 25 full-time people in the shop, round figures with another, three detailers. And, we're starting to rotate our field leaders, you know, in 2 week stints in there as well. That's just beginning literally as we speak, like last week. So that's a kind of our next step to make sure that they understand the full process. You know, hey, you know, you kind of in between jobs or it's a downtime, like we can come in for 2 weeks or longer, depending on the, you know, what they're doing, either build some of the stuff that you've ordered and like oversee and see how the system goes. And so generally speaking, that's working well, but we've also realized that, instead of 25, we probably need, 40. 40. And it's
that's like, exactly what I was going to say.
You go try looking for a commercial building to buy or lease right now. In an area that we, is specific to us, and it's like trying to find a house right now, right? It's market stuff. So we'll figure it out. We always do. It's just...
Now, you probably need, though, that you would want that to be kind of contiguous, the warehouse to the shop.
I think I'd prefer them to be separate. I mean, under the same roof, sure.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, my preference would be to have the office, prefab shop, and warehouse all in one spot. Mm. When we bought a 22,000 square foot building in 2009,
probably thought, we
occupied a quarter of it and we leased half of it out, we were like, this is more space than we'll ever need. Now the entire thing is office and occupied and we don't have enough space in the,
this is just such a great example.
It's been like, every couple of years we look at ourselves like, oh man, we need more space. It's okay. Mm.
But it's just a great example of, we could talk about, Lendlease creating that software and this is going to happen. And everyone says, yeah. Right. But the reality is, like, all of these changes, we're watching them. We just forget them because they've happened. Our business has already changed drastically in a very short period of time over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And, like, you look at you guys, and it's not just about growth where the company is growing. Like, that is whole completely different means and methods of building.
Right.
From where you were six, five,
10, 5, you name it, just from last year. I mean, which it's a continuous evolution, really. Yeah.
And then you talked about, like, multidiscipline kind of designing. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at Cox, who's experienced the same thing.
Yeah.
They moved their office, and I don't know how much bigger they made it. They made it a hell of a lot bigger.
Yeah.
And I think it was 3 years, maybe? They've already built an entire new building right. in the back.
Good for John. That's awesome. Yeah.
Because the prefabrication piece has gotten so big, and part of what they're building in the back is a section for multi-trade prefabrication. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's happening. It's not like, oh, you know, one of these days. And I know, like, I don't know that much about what Canastraro is doing, like, other than what I read. But sure. I know they're doing a lot with it. I don't know if they have multi-trade and multi-discipline trades in there, but
I think they probably do some of it. You know, where they'll put some electrical VFDs on their, you know, pumps and stuff before they ship them out, things of that nature.
Yeah.
Or have an electrician come do it for them.
Yeah.
That's my guess. I haven't been to their shop either, but they're a pretty sophisticated company.
Yeah. But just the idea of the fact that they're building that new building with a space meant for that. Like, it's happening. It's not like, oh, that's coming. Like,
No, I think it's happening too. I just it's really in the end we're trying to add value to our generals and our end users, right? Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, we need to plan more, so a little bit more overhead, mm-hmm. and have super efficient, productive installs, less on site. And you know, as a union member myself, that's not always great, but you know, we're still doing it with union labor, like, mm-hmm. in the prefab, and I do think it's going that way, and you can't ignore it. Like, it has to. Because the people who in the end pay for all the work we do, that's kind of what they want.
Yeah, and here's the thing: like, you don't want to be completely shut out. Like, it's great to say, like, okay, well, we'll keep doing this because it puts more people to work, right? The old way. Mm-hmm. But when Open Shop is prefabbing everything, and then there's no union work, so, like, well that's not good either, right? So it's like,
no, I would agree, and. Yeah.
From your perspective.
From my perspective as a business owner, right? Union or non-union, I think the whole entire electrical trade and construction in general is heading that direction.
Yeah.
It's very hard to argue against that.
Yeah.
So I would say if you want to be in business in 10, 15 years, you also need to do that. And in order to be a leader in that space, which is really what our end goal is you need to do it now.
Yeah.
So that's, you know... It doesn't matter, union, non-union. Like, that's just where it's going.
Yeah, what's that old? There's that saying that says the best time to do something was 10 years ago.
Yeah,
the next best time is today.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Like, it's like, plant a tree, right?
Yeah, there you go.
A guy from FMI always says that.
Does he? Okay, there you go.
Best time to plant a tree, 25 years ago.
So your prefab just it's continuing to grow.
Yep.
You probably would like to put more people on. You have some...
Sure, and we have...
constraints with the space, though, correct?
Yeah. It's getting there, sure. I mean, we're not quite there yet, mm-hmm. but it's getting there. Also, warehousing's an issue, right? So, you know, getting materials has been very challenging these days. So, because we don't trust the process 100% yet. So let's just say, you know, well, I can have 500 downlights delivered, you know, in next week, you know, from the factory, you know. We're like, all right, get them, because let's, you know. But the reality is no. We only need, you know, 50 next week, and then 50 the week after, and because that's the amount that we can. That's how just in time should work. We get them, we prefab them, we ship them out to site, just like that. Because, you know, they're just going to sit around for 9 weeks or whatever, however long.
But has supply chain, altered that?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
It has to, right?
Big time. I mean, you we can't buy plastic boxes right now. Romex costs more than MC cable. You know, it's...
That's insane.
It's insane. It's altered that for sure. So, yeah, so there's some other variables that, you know, I think your question is in regards to prefab, we need more space. The answer is yes, but I also feel like we have a lot of space if we trust the process of...
Feel more efficient.
If we're very efficient, right. And if you plan well and, you know, it's like you get a bigger space, which we will. But before that, and then we'll fill that up, right? Mm. It's like, let's just become efficient. And we are. There's just, you know, you always find that you can do better.
Oh, yeah. You give anybody more space, they're going to fill it with junk.
That's right.
Right? Like, that's...
Yeah. Human. It's human nature, I think. And it's and it's nice to have a couple of extra just in case, right?
Yeah.
And it's... Well, no. We planned it well. Everything came, the day before, and now we're going to build it and ship it out, and we'll never see it again. It's perfect.
Yeah, because it's not just a couple extra of one thing.
That's right.
It's a couple extra of... Everything.
That's right.
And then that's hundreds of extra things.
And then that you don't takes need up the space, right? And
yep.
Which is hard to come by. So
yeah, and I think all the efficiencies you gain by actually doing the just in time and zero waste, even if you do have one where, like, hey, if I ordered an extra one, this one broken one, we'd be all set. But okay, so you pay triple and get it overnighted. Like, how often does that happen?
Yeah,
you do that and then you make up for it 100-fold.
Sure.
On the rest
space
of
you gained, right? Or I agree with you.
Yeah.
This is just like, again, it's theory. Me like talking like how we all as a company really want it, but it's just got to get down to those granular details for every process that you do and have to kind of eliminate that waste.
Okay. Well, it's a good transition. What does the supply chain impacts that were, I mean, we know they're being, you know, they're a major issue across the entire industry and multiple industries. What does that look like for you?
Sure.
And what do you think the outlook is, even just short term? Because I mean, I know you can't really.
So copper pricing aside, right? I follow the copper index every day because we buy a lot of it. Mm-hmm. That aside, what does it look like? For us, it's a challenge. So we have, a large high rise, residential, and we can actually get Romex for this particular project, but the pricing is astronomically high, especially to what we bid it on, you know, a year and a half ago. We can't get boxes that are plastic because I guess the plants that made them down in Texas, you know, because of the weather that they had, they shut down basically. They're not back up to full capacity. I've gotten a lot of different stories that they just use force majeure to cancel all their contracts. And now I don't know if it's fact or not, but then they said, all right, we're just going to start up slowly. Resins is in, you know, I heard plaster, all those types of things are really affecting everybody across the board. In the short term, I'm being told that it is what it is. Just looking at historical things when this stuff has happened, it'll probably be back to normal. And when I say normal, it'll be, maybe the pricing will still be high, but we'll be able to get things and lead times will come back down to a regular, you know, however many, whatever it was 6 months ago, in a year, maybe a little about.
Yeah.
Total hypothetical, but I've been reading about it and I've been trying to figure out where it's going because that's what I have, you know, and we have to make educated guesses on this stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be challenging. Yeah. You know, it's going to be challenging to get things. And you're fighting with every other project that there's still a lot of construction going on. I know that you read, you know, across the nation. Mm-hmm. So we're battling with all those other jobs and all those other, you know, sub-economies. Mm.
Has it impacted things yet in a sense that where it's delaying projects or shelving projects or...
Knock on wood, no. It's impacted us financially, and I'm sure everybody, a lot of other people, and the fact that, like I said, you have to... You know, you bid on a job 6 months ago, and because copper and wire pricing and plastic boxes and things like that basically have been, remained somewhat steady over the past 5 years. Yeah. You know, sure, there's been some dips and increases, but somewhat steady, and availability has been pretty consistent. You know, you don't buy all that stuff and warehouse it. That costs money. It's not a lean tenant. Mm-hmm. So you get it to a point where you get ready to buy it, and now it's like, whoa, that pricing is way higher than what we carried. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, so it's affected us financially. Lead times are affecting us. We've been very transparent with our customers. Like, you know, you can't get a lot of bus duct and switchboards for what used to be 12 to 14 weeks is now half a year. Wow. And half a year is a long time when you're doing a job in 8 months, you know? And you really need to think about that stuff ahead of time. Mm. We are dealing with some pretty smart developers and general contractors where, you know, we're bidding on work right now that doesn't start until March of next year, with anticipated awards to subcontractors in June. So, you know, they got to give themselves my theory is that it's a 6 to 8 month buffer to get your stuff ordered. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah.
It would make sense if they would. It's also helpful that they have the designs done, mm-hmm. which never happens, right? They don't have the designs done so far in advance. But
yeah.
I think that's part of the reason. It has to be.
Yeah.
They have to think like that right now. It's just very, very difficult to get lots of things. And unfortunately, that's just kind of what we all are dealing with.
It's funny. I've been reading up on lumber.
Yeah, I've been reading you. Yeah. And in general about it.
Yeah. And some pretty smart people on the topic actually don't see it stabilizing.
How long?
No one will put a time on it, but they're, you know, per 1,000 board feet, you know, it's 1,600 was a crazy number, and now they're talking about 2,000.
Sure.
Right? Now, that's not like stock prediction, right? It's much more of it's a commodity, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's easier for them to look at, you know, the supply chain and what's availability and what's coming on. And so I don't think it's just someone saying like, oh, you know, Tesla's going to the moon, right? Like, it's okay. Well, who knows, you know, but are you looking at contractually any way to protect yourself?
We're talking about it. Yeah. I mean, the jobs that we've already signed contracts on, we'll have some conversations with some generals and owners, but we're, you know,
the contract's
it's a contract signed. Yeah. It's not, you know, it is what it is. We're big boys.
You should have locked in a price or whatever, like that. Like,
there's 1,000 ways to, yeah, exactly. You should have warehoused it. You should have done whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are some conversations we have to have, but we're protecting ourselves in the fact that, like, hey, if we bid a job today, you know, it's good for X amount of days, mm-hmm. 30, call it. And then, you know, if no one does anything with it for 90 or 100 and copper increased tenfold or 10%, whatever, well, guess what? We have to reprice it. Like, it's not, why? You know, you didn't make a decision. We don't have a signed deal. This is, you know, so that's kind of, you know, but you have to also be transparent about that and say, hey, look, you know, the market's crazy right now. It's very hard to get these things. We can honor it for 30 days. And when there's a big number to some of that stuff, you know, we just need to make sure we're communicating that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you are, historically, you've always said this price is good for 30 days, right?
Every quote we put up says that, but.
Right. And that.
And in the end, because labor pricing was known, and you know what your increases are, and commodity pricing was stable. Relatively stable. It was still the same price.
Yeah.
60 days later.
Yeah.
So yeah, but now you have to kind of just got to look at it a little bit, be smarter about it.
Yeah, because I mean, otherwise you change the game on people, right? You change the rules of the game on people where they're like, all right, the last 10 jobs I did, it said 30 days and I gave it to you at 90 and now all of a sudden there's a problem. Right. So that's where you're saying just communication.
Yeah. It's just a communication thing. Yeah. It's like, hey, look at this is
real.
Right. And it is real. It's
huge dollars.
It's huge dollars. Yeah. You know, when you have a high rise building, we might have $1.5-2 million of copper in that job just in wire. Right.
Yeah,
so it's insane. If that increases, you know, 30% in 6 months since you bid it, like, that's, those are big dollars. Like, yeah. And we don't have a contract, so why would we sign? That's, it's a hard thing to eat, let's put it that way. Because you can't control it.
Yeah.
We can't control it, right? It's not like we made an error in our estimate. It's not like we made an error in on-site production. It's something that's a bit out of our control.
Yeah. It was a developer that was I was talking to. It was a podium job, but it was the podium level is concrete or steel. I forget what it was. It was a steel package for the podium. They originally started out, I think it was at 160,000. The steel package had already gone up to 240,000, and they got an email or a call that morning, and it was like, if you don't have this locked in by the end of the day, it's going up another $60,000.
So it went from a 50% increase by end of the day.
That's
yeah. I've seen quotes for copper recently from our distributors who are in constant contact with the factories, and they said this price is good until 5 p.m. Eastern today. Same thing. It's like bananas. I need time to sit on this. This is, you know, some of them are large.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where we're already kind of probably going to lose a little bit of dollars on the actual buy here. Mm. And we're saying to ourselves, well, I need to dissect this. And it's like, well, price changes tomorrow. It might go down, like, but it probably not the way it's going. Wow. So yeah, it's, I don't remember. I've been doing this for, you know, 20 plus years now. I can't remember commodities like
being this
crazy.
Drastic, yeah.
I've seen, you know, we've lived through some, you know, the construction market's like a sine wave, right? You're always, you know, you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down, and sometimes the downs are long and sometimes the ups are long. Mm. But I don't remember the commodities like this. And I read a lot, but I can't, no one can tell me why either. So it's even more frustrating to someone who is kind of analytical and wants like reasons behind things so that we can solve them. You know, obviously COVID, obviously, you know, the weather in Natural Texas, disasters. That's great. I understand. Yeah, not that great, but you know what I mean? I understand those.
Yeah. But there's some trade stuff going on. But then I think a huge part of it is just these developing nations coming online. I might be off by a little bit, but you'll get the point. China from like 2015 to 2018 or 2020, a 3 year window, used as much concrete as the US did in the entire 20th century.
Right.
So that's insane. right? And continues to do that. Right. And so as these developing nations come up into like first world status or whatever the right term is, developed nation status, right? Mm-hmm. Like the demand for resources is gone through the roof. And so it's all those things coupled together, right? That's my thoughts on it. Who the hell am I? But my thoughts on it's that perfect storm of just tremendous demand, and then coupled with maybe trade issues, coupled with
some natural disasters, you know, pandemic, that, you know, all that stuff. Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's all feasible. I don't, it makes sense. I just, I wish I had some more certainty, in my own world, cause we need that.
Yeah, no, it's gotta be horrible for you. I just want to check the time. Okay. How about labor? Like, so materials are obviously a nightmare. Labor's a lot better than materials, but what's your outlook from a
workforce?
Yeah, from a workforce standpoint, like, you know, are the people available that you need?
So short term? Yeah, I will. I mean, the answer is yes. So I would tell you, and I don't know the numbers exactly, so I'm going to give you approximates. The number of apprentices in Local 103 that will be accepted this year, they had over 10 times as many applicants.
Great.
For that class. So there's a demand for people to get in to become, you know, local union electricians, which is wonderful for us.
That is wonderful.
So, I mean, labor's expensive, right? But, I mean, as far as the available labor currently, specifically to Local 103 in, you know, eastern Massachusetts, I would say is it's still available. Okay. There are some, you know, there is a list at the hall, but it's not, I mean, what's happening in the market generally, from what I'm seeing at least, is the quick hit tenant fit outs, the redo and restacking of floors by a company. That stuff's not happening right now. Mm-hmm. Now I'm told that will happen shortly. I'm told that every architect and engineer I talked to was really busy, and I think some of that office rework is starting. You know, is going to happen.
Filter through.
But obviously, because of the pandemic and no one's been in the office, it hasn't. No one's like, why are we spending money on that? We're already wasting money on rent. Mm-hmm. You know. So fortunately for us, we've had some backlog that on some larger developer projects. So I would say that the labor staff, generally speaking, is primarily doing that type of work. Pharmaceuticals, you know, commercial buildings being changed to, you know, lab life science stuff. That's happening a lot.
Yeah.
So the labor back to the is currently not an mm-hmm. issue. And you know, it's available, but I think generally speaking, it's stable as okay. opposed to.
And then on the office side, like the in-house, the project managers, the estimators, it's got to be a grind. It's a grind for everybody that I talk to.
To find people?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to find good people. You know, we're fairly picky. I would tell you it's always a grind to find really smart people. Who fit your culture, mm-hmm. who, you know, share your mentality when it comes to improvements and how to go to market and how to talk to customers. I would say we've been really fortunate with that, though. We've got we've had some key hires over the past year. And we're still looking for more. But, mm-hmm. yeah, it's – and our people are, you know, as a whole, a really good team. And so we're fortunate there. But we're always looking to add to that. And we're always, you know, it's, we do see increased revenue growth. Like, and that's, you know, I think the whole market, you know, anyone who does kind of larger construction work is probably seeing similar stuff right now. Generals, subs, you name it. So we are always looking for, you know, here's my plug. We are smart, yep. qualified people who want to, you know, get on board to get better, you know?
Yeah. I want to
do some cool work.
It's funny. I'm testing out starting this week. And we'll talk about this and then we'll wrap because I'm curious your opinion on it.
Hey, MassCons. At this point, Mike and I continue to have a conversation about an idea I have about morphing massconstruction.org and the podcast in a way to kind of create a new hiring mechanism for construction employees looking for work and for companies looking to hire. So it was an interesting conversation. It was just organic. It just popped up. And I want to say it's probably 15, 20 minutes long. I'm going to drop that tomorrow. And I would really love your input on this one. It's an idea that I have that I'm going to test out this week. So you'll probably see one coming up. I'm going to test it out. But give me your feedback just from the concept that Mike and I bounced back and forth. He had a really good idea about who he thinks should be part of the process when it comes to describing the jobs at your companies. But I would love to hear what you as listeners think. You know, it's like we have all this untapped resource of motivated people interested in construction, interested in building a business. What do you think about this concept? So please come back tomorrow, check your feed, listen to it, and let me know what you think. Also, thanks for everybody that sent some messages. I was glad to hear that the podcast with my wife, Karen, was so well received, and people liked a quick peek into the way we live here. And I also got some great feedback from people about what they're doing in their own homes. So thanks for listening. Thanks for helping. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for doing everything you do. Take care, everyone.
I'm getting in the plane. You were the vice in my city. I want you to be the Obama to my Biden. Looking for someone to confide in. I wanted to put multiple stones on your ring, but you just wanted a solitaire diamond. You were the dime of the party. body. I wanted to swing from a vine like we were in a safari. I know I miss you a lot, like people miss Harambe. You got me, you got me. I was gonna give you a second chance, but you acting childish, getting me livid. You ain't even right as the stylist. And we clicked on contact like Dorothy's heels, Wizard of Oz, man. How that feels. When it came to chocolate, you were the finest. Built like a glass of milk, but didn't catch me crying when it spilled. I'm about to jump to this hook like I'm Wilt the Still. Play me twice, that's a quick way to fast forward. Fire by my face and get yourself a passport. Fly away, fly away, fly away. Play me twice, that's a quick way to fast forward. Fly by my face and get yourself a passport.